go, 1230 AM, W255DN, Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The Fed has cut its key interest rate by a quarter point. It was not the half point cut many hoped for, analyst Stephen Cates.
This singular event is not going to make an enormous difference for individual borrowers in their lives. You know, credit card rates, mortgage rates, home equity, they're not just suddenly going to step change down.
Fired CDC Director Susan Minara has told lawmakers today the nation's public health system is headed to a dangerous place under Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy.
I believe preventable diseases will return, and I believe that we will have our children harmed for things that we know they do not need to be harmed by.
FBI Director Kash Patel back before Congress and questioned again about the Jeffrey Epstein files.
Any allegations that I'm a part of a cover-up to protect child sexual trafficking and victims of human trafficking and sexual crimes is patently and categorically false.
CBS News Brief. I'm Cammie McCormick.
For WXCO News, I'm Isabella Nieto. This week is the 7th annual National Clean Energy Week in Wisconsin. In 2019, Governor Tony Evers penned a proclamation outlining a clean energy goal for Wisconsin. It aims to make statewide energy consumption 100% carbon-free by 2050. Evers kicked off National Clean Energy Week on Monday at a downtown Wausau restaurant. Evers toured the basement and brewing area at the Red Eye Brewing Company. The restaurant features a wood-burning oven and is the first brewery in the state to use a solar thermal hot water system. Owners Brett Danke and Kevin Eichelberger showed Evers how solar panels heat the water used to make their small-batch beer. The governor said his visit was to thank the owners for being sustainably conscious.
They're doing everything they can to keep costs down and also be good to the environment.
And added he's pleased to see their success.
The interesting thing for me is that they've been doing it for a long time. When they first, from the day they opened the door here, they've been doing things around, you know, making sure that their energy is cheaper and more appropriately solar.
The visit comes as two Republican state legislators announced a proposal this week that would allow community solar programs in Wisconsin. State Senator Patrick Teston of Stevens Point and Representative Scott Krug of Rome introduced the bill to tackle rising utility bills. Under the legislation, electric customers could subscribe to a community solar facility and receive credits on their electricity bill for using renewable energy. Evers says increasing access to solar power options could be beneficial for Wisconsin, but he doesn't know if he'll sign the bill until it reaches his desk. I'm Isabella Nieto for WXCO News.
The magic number is 7. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers host the LA Angels again tonight. Last night, the Crew with a 9-2 win. Christian Yelich, a 2-run homer in the 4th. Now, 7 is the Brewers' magic number to clinch the division, but Yelly says it's still too early for all that right now.
Yeah, I mean, we just need to focus on winning that night, like not even thinking about like the magic number. We need to just keep stacking wins and playing good baseball, and that'll take care of itself. You can't do that in one night. And you start looking ahead, then things can get away from you a little bit.
College football, the Badgers, getting ready to host Maryland Saturday at Camp Randall, kickoff 11 a.m. NFL, Packers wide receiver Jaden Reed confirming he's now had surgery to repair his broken collarbone and foot fracture. Meanwhile, Christian Watson says his new contract extension takes some pressure off as he tries to come back from that torn ACL.
For me, I mean, it was really just to, you know, take that pressure off of myself so I can kind of just go out there when I get back and just play free.
That's Packers wide receiver Christian Watson with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You're listening to 98.9 WXCO, Wausau's home for the Tom Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, isolated storms tonight, and a low in the low 60s. Partly sunny for tomorrow, still the chance of rain, highs in the upper 70s. More storms around Friday, high low 70s. Rain chances continue into the weekend. We're sitting at 84 degrees right now.
On Friday night, the Wausau West High School football team plays host to Wisconsin Rapids in a Wisconsin Valley Conference matchup. Hear all the exciting action live on 98.9 WXCO online at WXCO.FM, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app, starting with the pregame show at 6:35 and the opening kickoff at 7 p.m. Wausau West Football on 98.9 WXCO is brought to you by Sun Printing, the Wausau West Athletic Department, Wisconsin Valley Flag Football, Featherstone Cabinetry, the Wausau West Gridiron Club, and K5 Construction. It's Wausau West taking on Wisconsin Rapids in high school football. Friday night, starting with the pregame show at 6:35 and the opening kickoff at 7 on Wausau's only radio home for high school play-by-play. 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.FM. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. She calls herself the wild card in Wisconsin's race for governor. State Representative Francesca Hong is our guest on getting into the race and the Brewers update as well. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4. This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
They're not there to serve you and me and the family farmer. They're there beholden to billionaires and their corporate overlords.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
You see our nation fraying and fracturing.
This is not normal. This is not the country that I grew up in.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Correct. We know better. We know better.
Clip that.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And happy hump day to one and all. We've got a small follow-up on our programming from yesterday. I was joined for half an hour of yesterday's program by State Representative Ahmad Rivera Wagner. We were talking about the fact that the MAGA regime here in the state of Wisconsin has blocked efforts by Tony Evers and Democrats in the Assembly and Senate to fulfill funding for a veterans program that helps with addiction and most predominantly veterans that struggle with housing insecurity. It is, in our state budget terms, a measly less than $2 million. For some reason, Robin Voss and Devin Lemahieu, the leaders of the Assembly and Senate respectively, have been blocking even scheduling a hearing on bills to restore that funding for this critical program in the Green Bay area. So here's the follow-up. The bill that has been offered by Senator Wall, Representative Spaday, and Representative Rivera Wagner, which is Senate Bill 385, Assembly Bill 383, was referred in the Senate to the Senate Committee on Licensing, Regulatory Reform, and State and Federal Affairs, which is chaired by Republican State Senator Chris Capanga. So we got an update. We're going to give you Chris Capanga's email and phone number so you can call him and tell him to schedule the hearing on these bills. Again, it's Senate Bill 385 to restore funding for a veterans program that helps unhoused veterans. It also helps with a variety of other social services. Here is Senator Capanga's phone, 608-266-9174. That's 608-266-9174. And his email is senperiodcapanga, K-A-P-E-N-G-A, at legis.wisconsin.gov. So tell him to schedule the hearing so that we can treat our veterans with the respect that they deserve. A bit of civic media news as well today. It is the first official day of the Civic Media Today newsletter that you can find on Substack. I just subscribed today. You should go check it out. If you don't know what Substack is, just put it into the little internet web browser. It will pop up. You can subscribe to Civic Media Today. This is a brand new daily email newsletter on Substack that will connect you to all of the terrific content that we produce every day across the network, and it is free. So go ahead and check that out. Now, on to the day's news. The Fed has announced today that it will be cutting interest rates by a quarter of a percent. Now, here's the interesting thing about that. People usually think, yay, that's great. Maybe my credit card interest rate goes down. It's cheaper to borrow. Yes, that's all true. But generally, when the Fed is cutting interest rates, it's because the economy is doing badly. And in this case, it's doing very badly. What the Fed is concerned about is rising unemployment, stagnating economy, the markets not loving what has been happening in the Trump economy. The 2.0 Trump tariff terror and the rest of the nonsense that he's been peddling as actual economic policy, it's not going well, and it's going to get worse. Now, here's the interesting thing here, folks. All of the Fed governors, nearly all of them, voted for the quarter point reduction. The guy that Trump just slammed through to get onto the Federal Reserve Board, yeah, he wanted a full half point reduction. Yeah. Anybody surprised by that? I'm not. And we've got a new entrant into the already crowded Democratic primary field for the governor of this great state of Wisconsin, Francesca Hong. Representative Francesca Hong throwing her hat in the race today. She identifies herself politically as a Democratic socialist. So we'll see how that goes for Miss Hong. We hope to have her on the show soon to talk about that. And here's what I want to get to. It is full bore Confederacy of dunces on Capitol Hill today, folks. Susan Monarez, or Monarez, I'm not quite sure how to say her name. I've heard both in the hearing today. She is testifying on Capitol Hill. This is the CDC director that RFK hired, then pressured to pre-approve whatever vaccine schedule recommendations would come out of the RFK vaccine denier skeptics now stocked board that reviews those things, to pre-approve them. That's not how it works, ladies and gentlemen. She refused to do so, stood and pushed back on some of the pressure coming from RFK in the White House, and then he fired her 29 days after he hired her. So she wrote an op-ed last week in the Wall Street Journal. It is scary. I highly recommend it. It's just a couple of pages. It's very scary. Here's a line from that. One of the troubling directives that meeting from that meeting, this is when she was called into to RFK's office. It was widely reported. Lots of media outlets covered it. I was told to pre-approve the recommendations of a vaccine advisory panel newly filled with people who have publicly expressed anti-vaccine rhetoric. That panel's next meeting is scheduled for September 18th to the 19th. It is imperative that the panel's recommendations aren't rubber stamped, but instead are rigorously and scientifically reviewed before being accepted or rejected. Duh. Let's listen to some of what has happened today. And I want to start with this. If you recall, it was RFK's confirmation hearing, his confirmation, that came the closest to blowing up in Trump's face. Okay. There were big questions about whether Senator Susan Collins would ultimately vote for him. She did. But the biggest question mark, and in fact, the deciding vote on his confirmation, was cast by Senator Cassidy, a Republican of Louisiana, and a doctor who knows stuff and about vaccines. And he, during his 5 minutes of questioning of Mr. Kennedy during his confirmation hearing, asked him some really specific questions about the very thing that Dr. Monarez has said he's done and what he's planning to do with the vaccine schedule. Let's take a listen, because, again, listen to what Kennedy says in his confirmation hearing under oath before the Senate. Let's take a listen.
Do you commit that you'll revise any CDC recommendations only based on peer review, consensus-based, widely accepted science? In other words, not personal beliefs or the beliefs of any single person that you or your department may identify?
Absolutely, Senator. I am not going to go into HHS and impose my preordained opinions on anybody at HHS. I'm going to empower the scientists at HHS to do their job and make sure that we have good science that's evidence-based, that's replicatable, where the raw data is published.
I'm almost out of time, so let me get to another question.
All right.
Do you promise that FDA will not deprioritize or delay review and or approval of new vaccines, and that vaccine review standards will not change from historical norms?
Well, we will have the best vaccine standards with safety studies, and I will not, if the
That's a little bit of a different answer than the question I asked.
Yeah.
Because what is the best could be in the eyes of the beholder. So let me read again. Promise that the FDA will not deprioritize or delay review and or approval of new vaccines, and that vaccine review standards will not change from historical norms.
Yes.
Yeah. Until apparently mid-September and tomorrow or the day after, when this vaccine advisory board packed with vaccine skeptics recommends some new schedule based on not peer-reviewed, not consensus science, but cherry-picked science by these wackadoodle vaccine deniers. And here's the thing. I don't get why they're doing this. Fine. Come in. Commission new studies. Look at the literature. Right? To test these things that you're concerned about, even though there are decades and decades of tests and statistics that prove that vaccines are safe. But redo this? Sure, go ahead. But that's not what they're doing. They're picking people based on their previously held vaccine skepticism, which is not based in peer-reviewed consensus, state-of-the-art medical and scientific knowledge, to then cherry-pick studies to come up with a vaccine schedule that is going to put our kids at risk. We've got the largest measles outbreak that our country has seen in a century. Why is that? Because people like RFK peddle in nonsense. So I want to go back to some of the testimony today from Dr. Menares, because it is scary. Let's take cut 21.
He directed me to commit in advance to approving every ACIP recommendation, regardless of the scientific evidence. He also directed me to dismiss career officials responsible for vaccine policy without cause. He said if I was unwilling to do both, I should resign.
That's not how it's supposed to work. It's just not how it's supposed to work. And all of us know that. And some of the things that Dr. Menares is claiming that Mr. Kennedy has said to other CDC officials is downright revolting and shocking. Take a listen to this.
And the one I think that hurt me the most was a particularly vivid phrase he said during the COVID outbreak. CDC told hospitals to turn away sick COVID patients until they had blue lips before allowing them to get treatment.
And it is fair to say, in your view, that those statements are not true.
Those statements are not true.
What? But it's the Confederacy of Dunces, ladies and gentlemen. What on God's earth would possess Mr. Kennedy to say such a thing? Other than someone who is inclined to believe conspiracy theories and every other, you know, completely ill-informed opinion that gets trafficked on the interwebs. This is from Wall Street Journal reporting. Menares also said Kennedy sharply criticized the CDC and his employees, calling it the most corrupt federal agency. He said CDC employees were killing children and that they don't care, that employees were, quote, bought by the pharmaceutical industry and forced people to wear masks like a dictatorship. Looney Tunes. RFK is an idiot. Is an idiot. An admitted drug user who said that he functioned better at the Ivy League university he got to attend because his name is Kennedy when he was doing heroin or some such other. I mean, he admitted this on a podcast. This is the guy. It's going to put all of our kids at risk. Some of the most recent reporting is specifically about the hepatitis B vaccine. We've basically eradicated that. It causes a long and painful death. We're going to return to this particular hearing on the other side. I might even bring you some cash money Patel, who continues his epic meltdown in front of Congress. Confederacy of dunces indeed. Folks, stay with me. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
Looking to give back to your community? Visit VolunteerWisconsin.org to find volunteer opportunities near you. Join us in celebrating United Ways Month by getting involved. Visit VolunteerWisconsin.org or contact your local United Way today. Paid for by United Way of Wisconsin.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. A new analysis from Clean Wisconsin shows AI data centers in the state will use more power than all the homes in Wisconsin combined. Potential energy demand has been disclosed for just two projects in the state, the Vantage Data Center in Port Washington and Phase 1 of the Microsoft Data Center in Mount Pleasant. Those two projects alone require a combined 3.9 gigawatts of power, which is enough energy to power more than 4 million Wisconsin homes. Wisconsin has just under 3 million housing units in the entire state. Senator Tammy Baldwin has announced Senate passage of a bill that will help protect Wisconsin lakes from toxic algae. The legislation would improve monitoring, forecasting, and prevention of harmful algal blooms by requiring better coordination among task force agencies, state and local entities, and tribes. Right now on the Defender podcast, the Wisconsin Climate March is coming. Listen to find out more at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you passionate about local high school sports? So are we. WXCO 98.9 FM is proud to be the only station in Wausau bringing you live, play-by-play coverage of high school sports, game after game, season after season. But we can't do it alone. We are currently seeking local sponsors and community partners who believe in the power of sports to bring people together, inspire youth, and energize our hometown pride. Promote your business, support our local athletes, be heard by thousands of loyal local listeners. If your business is interested in supporting live sports broadcasts while gaining valuable exposure, now is the perfect time to become a WXCO sports sponsor. Message us on our Facebook page or call or text our sales rep, Aaliyah, at 608-573-1597. That's 608-573-1597. Let's keep Wausau High School sports on the air together.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Dumpster fires galore, Cash, Money Money Patel, RFK Jr. It is the Confederacy of Dunces brought to you by none other than the MAGA regime. Result? More death, basically. They are talking about, I've seen some reporting that is indicating that RFK Jr. and this vaccine advisory panel, which he's stocked with all these vaccine skeptics and wingnuts, are targeting or part of the childhood vaccine schedule changes that they're looking at is the hepatitis B vaccine, which is given basically like you're born, you get the hep B vaccine. Because it was a killer in the past, and it is a long, not long necessary, but is a painful death. It is highly transmissible. It is blood-borne. It's called a silent killer because it can become chronic before you have any symptoms. And then once you do find out because you have symptoms, you can die within like a week or two. This is a physician. His name's Brian McMahon, who treated some hep B cases back in the 70s. Told me about a particular patient, 18 years old, 4-point GPA with a full ride to university. She kept having these stomach pains, but she put off a week to the doctor. Finally, 2 weeks before she's supposed to graduate from high school, she comes in to see me. She had a big mass in her liver. I biopsy tested her for hep B. She was positive, and it was liver cancer. And so I sat with her 2 weeks later when she died a horrible, painful death. This is a safe vaccine. And yet, people are thinking that this is part of what's going to get changed in these new vaccine protocols. And Dr. Rand Paul, who knows the science, was acting like this is some abomination. Listen to his questions and Susan Menarez, former CDC director's response. Take a listen.
See, everybody's like blithely going along, we can't change the childhood. You're somehow terrible if you want to change the childhood. We should be discussing what is the childhood vaccine schedule, and you should be, the burden should be on you. You want to make all the kids take this? The burden is upon you and the people you wouldn't fire to prove to us that we need to give our six-month-old a COVID vaccine and that we need to give our one-day-old a hepatitis B vaccine. That's what the debate ought to be about, not whether all vaccines are good or whether we live in Alice in Wonderland.
I actually agree with you. And I was open to the science. I just would not pre-commit to approving all the ACIP recommendations without the science.
Untrue.
What a jerk. Shame on you, Senator Paul. You know better. Untrue. How do you know, sir? Were you in the room? I mean, Confederacy of Dunces. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Matt from Middleton, you're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi. First of all, small point of order. Remember, Rand Paul is like an eye doctor, so let's not give him too much credit.
Fair point, my friend. Fair point.
Yeah. Did we already forget that somebody took literal rifle shots at the CDC and a police officer was killed? Where was this call to tone down rhetoric and that political violence will not be tolerated when they seem to politicize everything while they've managed to turn vaccines and science and medicine into politics? And their rhetoric got a police officer killed. Where was the crackdown then?
Hear, hear, Matt. Thank you so much. That is literally the second thing that Susan Munarez, former CDC director, said in her op-ed in the Wall Street Journal dated September 4th. Quote, during my first week as CDC director, a gunman opened fire on our Atlanta headquarters. Investigators recovered more than 500 shell casings at the scene and more than 180 rounds struck CDC campus buildings. Officer David Rose was killed. Where was all the right-wing outrage then? How about when our babies start dying from Hep B, a perfectly preventable disease, or measles? How bad does this nonsense have to get before people start standing up and saying, science is real. Vaccines are good. They save lives. Unbelievable. Ross from Crawford County, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, Maggie. Thanks for letting me out. Great show.
Thank you.
So I'll make a quick comment about the vaccine thing. I think there's a lot of people who don't have a science background who are concerned that vaccines cause problems with kids. Okay, so I mean, I would totally understand if Kennedy said, "Look, we're going to spend money and we're going to try to nail this thing down," but instead he's sort of just assuming already that these vaccines are a problem, and so he's causing all this. It's like you said, insanity. But I'd like to switch to the economy, because the state of the economy right now is sort of a funny thing, because there was all these tariffs and then back and forth. It seems as if like there are two economies. So when one looks at the stock market,
Go ahead, Russ.
It's going up. It's gradually going up. There was a short crash, but it's going up. So one could say on that end of things, you know, like the poop has not hit the fan yet. For working class people and people who may not be worrying about the stock market, it's really, I think you think of it as inflation and these kind of things. And inflation still isn't super high. It's like 3%. But I think what it is that these tariffs, I really believe that there was a big momentum during the Biden years, post COVID. People were spending money. The money was there, wherever it came from, I don't understand. But people were spending money and are still, like they said that this last month, that people were still spending a lot of money. So, but there are these indicators that say that there could be problems ahead. So I sometimes think with the economy, to the average person, it might look like it's okay. Prices are a little bit higher. But I think...
I got to hop in. Just one note on the economy. The stock market ain't the economy. What you feel in your pocketbook is, that is reality. And here's this. We haven't even come close to the worst of it. It will get worse. I promise you that. The prices will continue to go up. We're going to continue this great conversation. On the other side, I'm going to be joined by Representative Angelina Cruz.
used to be a teacher before she was an elected official. We'll talk about the state of Wisconsin's education.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio WXCO, home of the big high school sports show.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 98.9 WXCO.
For WXCO News, I'm Isabella Nieto. Average gas prices fell 8 cents per gallon over the last week, Melissa Kay reports.
The average price in the state on Monday, being $2.88, means prices are 3.9 cents higher than a month ago. However, this is still 8.5 cents per gallon lower than this time last year. More states saw decreases than increases last week, and there's good news on the horizon. The transition to cheaper winter gasoline begins on Tuesday across most of the country. Officials at Gas Buddy expect average gas prices to continue to decline in the weeks ahead, as long as hurricane season remains quiet.
Governor Tony Evers on Monday signed an executive order directing state officials overseeing health and insurance policies to protect vaccine access. The order comes after the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services issued new restrictions last month on who can get a COVID-19 shot. The order requires the state's chief medical officers to issue their own orders and guidance on the COVID-19 vaccine. It also directs all insurers regulated by the state to provide coverage for the vaccine without cost sharing with customers. According to a report from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Wisconsin joins 14 other states, including Minnesota and Illinois, in creating vaccine protocols that do not defer to federal health guidelines. In a statement, Evers called the new restrictions on vaccines reckless and dangerous, saying U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and the Trump administration are, quote, putting the health and lives of kids, families, and folks across our state at risk. I'm Isabella Nieto for WXCO News. You can find more news anytime at WXCO.FM.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Feel like spending Christmas in Las Vegas? I'm sure the town would love to bring tourism back, and hopefully Mariah Carey's new residency will help. Mariah Carey's Christmas Time in Las Vegas will kick off November 28th at Dolby Live at the Park MGM. Carey will perform 10 shows that will conclude on December 13th. Do you think she'll sing All I Want for Christmas? If you're looking for a road trip, tickets go on sale September 20th. Sydney Sweeney continues to diversify her resume with her latest role being a maid. The Housemaid stars Sweeney alongside Amanda Seyfried in this dark psychological thriller. The story follows Sweeney's character, who is fresh out of prison and who is hired by Seyfried's character and her handsome husband, and becomes close to the attractive couple. Pretty sure this isn't an adult film, but who knows? The Housemaid will drop in theaters December 19th. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 98.9 WXCO, Wausau's home for Matinee on Air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels.
Mostly cloudy, isolated storms tonight, and a low in the low 60s. Partly sunny for tomorrow, still the chance of rain, highs in the upper 70s. More storms around Friday, high low 70s. Rain chances continue into the weekend.
We're sitting at 84 degrees right now.
On Wednesday from 6 till 8 p.m., it's the Big High School Sports Show on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.FM. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. I'm Chad Holmes, joined former Wausau West High School head football coach Jason Foster and myself as we talk high school football. We'll look back at last week's action and look ahead to week 5 of the campaign. Plus special guests. At 6:30, we'll be joined by Merrill High School head football coach Jason Wodzinski. The Blue Jays come off a big win over Medford last week. Then at 7:06, it's our student athlete guest from DC Everest, senior running back Corbin Enzenroth. Enzenroth has run for more than 400 yards the past 2 weeks as the Evergreens defeated Wisconsin Rapids and Wausau West. It's the Big High School Sports Show, Wednesday from 6 till 8 p.m. on 98.9 WXCO, WXCO.FM. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Thursday, we'll talk to yet another new 2026 candidate for legislature, and we'll talk vaccines with Dr. Kelly Snook. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Wednesday. It's 4:30, and it's time for one of my favorite segments of the week. We call it Broad Appeal because I talk to amazing women elected officials and political leaders, movement organizers, and activists from across the state and beyond, because women in those roles have broad appeal. Also, I'm happy to call myself abroad. I mean it with deep and reverential respect. With all of that, super happy to bring to the show this afternoon Representative Angelina Cruz of Assembly District 62 from the Racine area. Welcome to the program. It's great to have you here.
It's great to be here, Maggie. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really excited.
Yes, me too. You are a almost brand spanking new legislator, which is so amazing. But I want people to hear from you about your decision to run for office and how that really came to be, because this is the story that I hear in different versions and forms every single time I talk with, and I think it's very pronounced, with women elected officials. They're doing their job, they're working in their communities, and they'll see a problem or a need. And it really becomes this catalyst, this call to serve. So tell folks, you're a teacher. You've been a teacher for a long time, teaching middle schoolers, fifth graders. Tell us how that work got you into the teachers union and some involvement there and how this all evolved. How did you become Representative Cruz?
That is a really great question. I like to point out to people that being a politician or legislator was nothing that I had ever aspired to do with my life. Some days I wake up and wonder, is this what I want to keep doing? And I say that jokingly. I am very happy to be in the legislature serving the people of Assembly District 62. But it was quite a journey. I did start teaching in 2003. So for over two decades, I have identified myself as a proud public school teacher, and started as a fifth grade elementary school teacher at Dr. Jones Elementary in Racine, Wisconsin. So it was a K-5, very much in the elementary world. In about 2010, I graduated from UW-Milwaukee with a degree in educational policy. And so that was sort of my world, my trajectory. I just thought that I would be a fifth grade elementary school teacher forever. Fast forward to February 2011.
Yep.
And our governor at that time, Scott Walker,
yes,
passed the budget repair bill, which included...
Let's not call it that. Let's just call it straight up union busting. That's what he did.
thank you, ma'am. Yes, mm-hmm. That indeed is what he did, which really activated... I know I am not unique in terms of that landscape having activated just a world of unionists fighting back, and that was sort of the fire starter, if you will. And so it was at that time that Act 10 was passed, a union busting bill that targeted specifically public sector workers, and I would argue most specifically public school teachers, educators, really from the K-12 world all the way up to the university level. Public educators became public enemy number one to the state legislature. And it was at that time that it awakened in me the understanding that I needed to really invest in my local union in order to defend public education as we knew it at that time in the state of Wisconsin. So I mean, I became a building representative in my little elementary school. And from there, I became the political action committee chairperson. I became an elected officer and sort of worked my way up to being elected as the president of my local. At the time, it was Racine Education Association. I'm still an REA member, but internally, our two bargaining units, the REA and the REAA, have since combine their governance structure. So we sort of move as one.
Yes.
Internally, we recognize that we needed to combine our efforts, that our struggles were the same.
Yes.
And so from that point on, I was the first Latina to be elected to that position in 2016. And I remain the sitting president of Racine Educators United, which is the umbrella of the REA and the REAA. So I'm serving both as the local union president and as the state elected legislator for Assembly District 62 currently.
Keeps you busy, I would imagine.
Sure, it sure does.
One thing that I wanted to talk with you about is we truly have in the state of Wisconsin a public education massive defunding that has been going on. It started under Scott Walker in the Republican-controlled legislature. And the defunding is coming in all sorts of ways and forms. It's a little bit like death by a thousand, and I'm not going to call them paper cuts because it's bigger, but like death by a million gashes kind of thing. So it's both not fully funding, not meeting the needs of school districts, rural and urban. All school districts are hurting right now. But it's also the siphoning of funds out of public schools for voucher schools, which are basically can discriminate at will, reject any student they want, have little to no accountability, not that's on a state level at all. It really depends on the district you're in and how the district tends to operate and oversee, if at all, voucher schools. There is no long-term study that I'm aware of that has ever shown that voucher programs produce better academic results over the long term for kids. So that it's a dubious proposition. Now, I'm going to say all that and say this. Back in the day in Milwaukee, it was a powerful tool to give largely Black and brown families some additional choices because we had stupidly decided to fund public schools through property taxes, a proposition that will never make any damn sense to me. But I wanted to give you the opportunity to speak a little bit about this because I know that you just introduced a bill to address this failure of the state to be accountable to fund the public schools that benefit businesses and are very much in the best interests of our kids.
Right. So that is, let me think about where to start with that. So you're correct. The state of Wisconsin is failing to meet its constitutional obligations to deliver a free and fair public education to all the children of the state of Wisconsin, and has been systematically divesting from the public school system for the better part of over two decades. So I would argue it started even before Scott Walker. Scott Walker accelerated it, if that is even,
yes. Yep.
I mean, it's a little mind blowing, right? So 2011, as a teacher unionist, as a union president, we very much characterize Act 10 and the attack on teachers' unions. We understand it as Scott Walker and the Republican legislator going after the last line of defense.
Yeah.
In public school standing in the state of Wisconsin. So I also like to point out that even though there was this concerted attack against our collective bargaining rights and stripping us of those, we still exist.
Right.
Racine Educators United is one of the largest local labor unions in the state of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Education Association Council, which is our state affiliate, is the largest labor union in the state of Wisconsin. And we are all affiliates of the National Education Association, which is the largest labor union in the country. So we still exist. We're still here. We're still fighting. And that is really sort of what keeps, to the best of our ability, the attack at bay. But we're really, we've come up to a point in time in which I don't see how what we are suffering under is sustainable.
No, it's absolutely not tenable. Like, the dam is breaking and cracking and the water is starting to rush down the river. It's like every single county, every single school district, I feel like, has had to go to a referendum. I was so disgusted and appalled by efforts to introduce legislation by the MAGA regime in this state to ban that practice, to actually, and it's like, what is your point? You won't sufficiently fund the schools, and now you'll take away the one tool they have to scrape and claw their way to at least some way to MacGyver from year to year, and they want to strip that away. I have to ask, why? If the public, if that community votes for a referendum to raise their property taxes to fund their schools, what business is it of the state to step in and say, you can't do that? It's an abomination. I wanted to also make this point, and I don't think it gets made quite enough, about voucher schools and some of their awful, awful history in this country. They really first came about, if we understand a voucher to be taking public taxpayer monies that would have otherwise gone into your public schools, and sending it to a private, unaccountable, unregulated, no standards, doesn't know if it works, other private school that can discriminate. The first time we saw these en masse in this country was after Brown v. Board of Education. They were called and are now known as segregation academies, and they sprung up all across the South. And their explicit purpose was to allow schools to not permit Black students to attend, but to use public money to fund those schools. We see that operating in a very similar way, meaning they're not saying it's for just white kids, because that would maybe get them in trouble. But the result is, especially in a large district like Racine or Milwaukee, that you have kids, we are segregating our schools. And I just wanted to read this very brief statement. This is from the White Citizens Council. Okay, this is its journal back from 1964. It was in Mississippi. Okay, their journal was called The Citizen. And they were trying to encourage white parents to send their white kids to these now all-white segregation academies that didn't permit Black kids to attend and were funded by taxpayer dollars. Here's what this magazine said. See if it sounds familiar to you, Representative. Parents want their children to be raised and educated free from the tensions of racial conflict in the classroom, free from the frustrating drag of mass mediocrity, and free from the blight of self-styled progressive educators whose avowed aim is to turn young Americans from the established inheritance of their fathers to alien theories of collectivism and anti-white racism. It's as if those words were spoken by Charlie Kirk yesterday, or J.D. Vance, or Donald Trump, or any of the other woke police that has been invented out of nowhere. I'm going to stop my rant. We're going to take care of a little bit of business. I'm going to come back with Representative Cruz. Again, she's from Assembly District 62 out of Racine. And we're going to talk about what's coming next. How do we shore up our public schools? How do we solve this problem? Because the kids indeed are our future, and we owe them far better than what Republicans have been delivering for our kids in this state. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin.
purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
On Thursday night, the Wausau East High School football team travels to Mosinee for a Great Northern Conference matchup. Hear all the exciting action live on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app, starting with the pregame show at 6:40 and the opening kickoff at 7 p.m. Wausau East High School football on 98.9 WXCO is brought to you by Compass Properties, Grand Avenue Art Factory, Sun Printing, Wisconsin Valley Flag Football, Lop Notes, The Mill Yard, Northland Painting, Mua's Callan Street Pub. It's Wausau East at Mosinee and High School Football, Thursday night, starting with the pregame show at 6:40 on your home for high school sports. 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Joe Zepecki.
As much as I disagree with Charlie Kirk, no American should ever face physical violence for what they believe. And maybe that's how we get past it and move forward, is just say, this is not about, we can't get to a period of political violence. We're in one, and now we got to get out of it. And we have to recognize each other's humanity.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network, because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are in this week's segment of Broad Appeal, a segment we bring to you every Wednesday at 4:30, where we talk to women elected officials, political leaders, activists, organizers, and folks that need to hear from women more. This is the place to find them every week, 4:30 on this very program. We've got Representative Angelina Cruz of Assembly District 62. She is a lifelong teacher. She now also is the president of Racine Educators United and, of course, is serving Assembly District 62 and her wonderful state legislature. We're happy to have her here. Before the segment, we were talking about some of the terrible history of voucher schools. They were first used en masse all across the Deep South following the Brown v. Board of Education to set up segregation academies using taxpayer dollars. They have always been used as a way to siphon dollars away from free, widely available public education. And you wanted to talk a little bit about what went down in this last biennial budget about voucher school funding versus public school funding, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will say openly that I voted against the state budget. I primarily ran on a platform of pro-public education, I think, that to no one's surprise. And so I was very disappointed with what was put forward in terms of it not being enough. As we covered earlier, we've had over two decades of disinvestment in the public school system. And so what was put forward in terms of public school funding, we had some modest increases to special education reimbursement, 42% the first year, up to 45% in the second year. But we also had that in conjunction with $0 in new general aid for both years in the biennium.
Yeah.
And so while we won modest increases to special education, that should never have precluded in putting money into general aid.
General aid for schools, and every school has been having massive problems. And I think they've gotten worse post-COVID, right? Because you've seen enrollment slightly drop in public schools. A lot of public school funding is driven on a per pupil basis. They're counting heads literally when the school year starts, as any teacher will tell you. And I wanted to just lean into the special education funding reimbursement rate for a moment, if you will.
Absolutely.
Because it is one of the grossest inequities that is so clear that you can point to. First problem between voucher schools and public schools is voucher schools can decline admission to any student who might need an individualized education plan, right? Mm-hmm. The IEPs or disabled students. So, you know, we don't want to do that. Public schools can't. They are the educator of last resort. And so the idea that a public school special education reimbursement rate would be at, say, let's just call it 45%. When a voucher school's reimbursement rate, courtesy of Scott Walker and the MAGA regime here in the state of Wisconsin, is at 90%. I think it's even a little over 90. What is the reimbursement, and why are those rates so important? And why is the failure to increase them for public schools creating a real and active daily harm to public schools?
Correct. So the reimbursement rate is related to the billing amount that it costs to deliver services that are stipulated in individualized education programs. So services that special education teachers and special education teams determine. So those are comprised of not just the teachers, but also administrators and advocates and parents, in many cases, the students themselves. They come up with a plan to make sure that the needs of the child are met in the educational setting. And then once those services are delivered, teachers are responsible for documenting and submitting billing. And so what the state of Wisconsin is currently reimbursing those costs at are about 30% is what they currently stand. So we just bump that up to 42% this first year they'll be reimbursed. Where does the rest of that cost then come from? What covers the other 70%? That comes from the general funding sources. So the funding sources that we get through the general aid are pure pupil expenditures that are allotted to districts, and that total amount, the money is then pulled from that pool of money.
It's like a double whammy, right? Mm-hmm. So the public schools have more on a relative basis, meaning how many SPED students to as a proportion of your total school population. Public schools now have a higher proportion of SPED students as compared to what they did even 10 years ago, because voucher schools will decline admission to kids that have complex special needs. And so it's pulling out of the general fund, which they don't have enough money from to begin with. And they're getting a double whammy because they don't get reimbursed like the voucher schools do. It makes me so mad. Yeah. So, Representative Cruz, what are we going to do about this?
Yeah.
How do we begin to? Please.
Underscore. So we got $0 in new general aid for both years in the biennium. However, voucher and charter schools, taxpayers are on the hook for about $1.8 billion guaranteed for funding that system, those systems, over the next 2 years. So fully funded voucher charter schools, not funded public schools, which are the only schools with the commitment, the capacity, and the legal obligation to serve every child that walks through their doors.
We're gonna have to leave it there. I'm so sorry. Time flies when you're having fun with Representative Angelina Cruz. She's got legislation to make the state accountable. Call your state rep and senator and tell them to support Representative Cruz's legislation to fully fund our children's future. Up next, I'm joined by General Russell Honoré. It's going to be an incredible discussion. He was the general that oversaw the Katrina response. Stay.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio. WXCO 1230 AM. W255DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The Fed is cutting a key interest rate. Chair Jerome Powell.
Today, the Federal Open Market Committee decided to lower our policy interest rate by a quarter percentage point.
The Fed also projected it would make two more cuts this year as concern grows about the labor market. Former CDC Director Susan Menares was before lawmakers today.
I was fired for holding the line on scientific integrity, but that line does not disappear with me. It now runs through every parent deciding whether to vaccinate a child, every physician counseling a patient, and every American who demands accountability.
She told senators deadly diseases like polio are poised to make a comeback. FBI Director Kash Patel was questioned again about the Epstein files. He says he can't release more because of court orders.
We're talking about the evidence you've got. It's got nothing to do with what those courts have.
Do you have any idea about how the law works?
On Wall Street today, stocks finished mixed after the Fed's decision on interest rates. CBS News Brief, I'm Cammie McCormick.